Good afternoon and welcome to another Saturday of Woods and Water, South Carolina. My name is Roger Metz, and you're listening on 94.5 WGTK, The Answer. You can listen here every Saturday from 3 to 4. You can catch up with a lot of other things that I'm into or going and doing or things that might interest you on Facebook, Woods and Water SC, Instagram, Woods and Water SC Radio. I think it's kind of long Instagram. I have a Twitter account. Don't expect to see me much on there. Just some about tweeting that just doesn't sound exactly right. And I've also brought back and started activating, posting some more things into the Woods and Water South Carolina calendar of events. Things you hear here every Saturday, plus a lot more that you know, I could spend a whole hour talking about things going on in the outdoors around South Carolina. So I created a Facebook page back in, I don't know, 17 maybe, and getting that going again, trying to give you more options and more places to go to find things to do. And with that, I'm going to be really mean. All right, you ready? It's kind of a double-edged sword because it's mean to me too. But this week, my brother and I took off Saturday, and we haven't done just a road trip with the two of us since 1990. 29 years ago, we did our first hunting trip. We were gone 17 days. Just a great time. And he drew a mule deer tag for Colorado this year. He's driving out by himself, said, "Hey, you want to ride?" And I said, "Sure, I'll go." So we got in the car Saturday morning, and here's a pretty cool thing. You can get on I-40 out of Asheville, you know, just, I don't know, 30 miles north of Greenville, 25 miles north of Greenville. And 1,479 miles later, on I-40, we get off at Las Vegas, New Mexico. It's that easy to get out. And this show is about South Carolina, but I travel. Everybody travels. We all look for places to go. There's a lot here in the state, and we cover a lot of the places you can travel to in the state. But, you know, I like to go, and so do a lot of other people. Whether you like to hunt like we do, whether you like to hike like we did a lot this past week, whether you like to go trout fishing. I fished three different kinds of trout. Specifically, I'd say that. Three different places across Colorado. And there's places all over the West you can do this at. North Carolina, Virginia, West Virginia. I mean, I just happen to like the West. So, yeah, so we left Saturday, spent Saturday night a little over 1,000 miles in Oklahoma City, on the other side of Oklahoma City. Got up next morning, drove to, see, this is where I get a little confused. Days run together. So Sunday night we'd have stayed. No, we didn't stay in Buena Vista. We stayed somewhere out there. It'll come to me. But the thing about it is, here's the part that really gets you. I'm sitting here in the studio on Wade Hampton Boulevard in Greenville. I'm right at 1,000 feet above sea level. 1,000 feet, okay? You go up to Gatlinburg, I think it's 1,200. And you go up, you're higher getting to Gatlinburg than when you get up there. Everybody thinks Gatlinburg's in the mountains. It's not. About the same. Denver, you know, they call it the Maha City. So 7,000 feet. Gunnison, Colorado. 7,700 feet above sea level. Buena Vista, Colorado, 7,965. It gets better. Leadville, Colorado, which is one of the towns we went to on our travel, 10,152 feet above sea level. Cottonwood Pass, which is where we did some scouting because that's where one of the places Paul might go when he mule deer hunts, 12,126 feet. And then the highest we got was in Rocky Mountain National Park, 12,285 feet. And if you want to see a really cool video, I love elk. I mean, I love being out west and looking. The woods they're not as near as claustrophobic as ours are. But we were above tree line. And tree line in Colorado is somewhere around 11,000 or so. It goes a little bit up and down depending on the terrain and all. But we've been glassing elk, you know, half mile off. And this is another, I'm going to rabbit trail again. Get people, buy you a pair of good binoculars, take them with you. You know, I like to say, don't forget the camera at the end of the show. Equally as important for anybody is a good pair of binoculars. And glass, my glass and binoculars has come so far. You know, it used to be a huge difference between, you know, like Bushnell, Nikon, Leupold, Swarovski, Schmidt and Bender. Glass has come a long way. You can get a good pair of binoculars for $150, $200. In the world that it opens up for you, I mean, here we were, you know, Rocky Mountain National Park, people all over, and they're like, what are y'all looking at? No binoculars, no camera. What are y'all looking at? And it was so much fun giving these people binoculars, saying, okay, you see where that? There's the one place we had a herd of about 40 elk out there, and they were a long way off. You know, it's hard to judge distance out there, but, you know, just round it off, say half mile, a little less, a little further. And they were like, okay, you can see this rock wall right here, and you got the park above, and they're like, what's the park? Well, the meadow. The cut park's out there. It's the meadow. See where it comes down to the corner? Well, just above the rock wall is a line of timber, and then just on the other side of the timber, you see, and it took them, you know, 5 minutes to find the elk. But gosh, don't go someplace like that. Don't head out. I mean, even the beach is fun to have them. I mean, even around your house, get a pair of binoculars. Use them. And I can't remember where I was with this. Anyway, we were glassing elk and mule deer, had bulls wallowing, had, you know, herd bulls up with cows and all. But we came around, we were almost 12.5. And this elk comes up over the ridge, way above tree line, looking for love. He's looking for, you know, the cows. And he found five of them right there in front of us, bugling. The pictures I've got, just incredible. But that's the population. And you can train here. You can try to get that stamina up. But it's tough. That air is so thin out there. We hiked Wednesday morning, got up. It was 42. We drove up, hiked into some alpine lakes to fish. And it's a lot easier coming down than going up. We didn't stop at all coming down. We stopped three or four times going up. I'll admit it. I'm shameless. But just a great time, you know, temperature wise. I was saying, they can get back here and it's what, 95? And it looks like it is getting cooler. I promise you, fall is on the way. But anyway, that was my week. So I'm sorry I'm being mean. He's still out there. He starts mule deer hunting this morning. We've actually went to one of the places he wanted to start and did some glassing, saw some deer. It's amazing. Perspective changes when you're above and looking down, and you look at Google Earth here. Oh, I can. That's not a problem. And you look at the trail going down, you're like, that could be a problem when in reality, when you're face-to-face with it. So I urge you, for no more than, I think it took us $180 in gas to get out there, a night's. And, you know, the KOA campgrounds everywhere out west. They have little camping cabins. They have bedding. All you got to do is bring sheets. And they're in some of the most gorgeous places you could ever want to spend the night. It doesn't take much to get out there when you put your mind to it, people. Whether it's here in South Carolina, where it's jumping in the car on the spur of the moment, heading out on an adventure. It's just, you got to get out there. You never know what's there until you see it, right? So, anyway, that's me being mean. Sorry about that. But it was so nice. We had snow one morning, and Colorado's home to 49 peaks above 14,000 feet. You can believe that? 49 peaks in Colorado are above 14,000 feet. And we saw a couple had a slight dusting of snow. You know, if it's 40 degrees at 9,000 feet, it's snowing at 14 if you're raining. And it rained on a couple times. Just little clouds come across, dump some rain, move on, sun comes back out. And then, boy, I got pictures. Gosh, I got pictures. Oh, well. I'm sorry for being mean, but hang on. The rest of the show is not as... I won't rub in your face that I was out there, but got a just busy week, so I didn't line up anybody to come in. Got a bunch of stuff to go over with you. We'll catch you in a short calendar events, go through some news, hopefully inspire you to get outside. So hang on. More Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side of the break. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I will say this, and this is something my brother told me. He said that the altitude doesn't affect you the older you get as far as headaches. Because I can remember going out there when I was younger, Boy, you get me above 9,000 feet, and I start getting a headache. This time, I was short of breath, as always, but nothing like what I have been, and really no headaches, which is pretty interesting. So, there's, you know, there is advantages to getting old, people. hunting season's here, and I know, and we're going to, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on hunting today, but I did want to tell you the Department of Natural Resources, for those of you who are out there who have a hard time with regulations, all the books are out. The 2019-20 hunting regulation books are out. They've been out for maybe 2.5-3 weeks or so. All the regulations in it. But DNR did something this year that that they promoted, and that is e-regulations. You know, mobile regulations, easy to find, easy to read. So if you go to your, if on your phone, and I'll tell you how to get there on your phone and then on the website too. On your phone, if you just type in SCDNR into Google, I have no problem using Google. They know more about me than I do. One of the first real websites that comes up is South Carolina Hunting and Fishing Seasons and Regulations 2019 e-regulations. And you go over to it and you punch in, like I said, this is on my iPhone, and it takes you to Hunting and Fishing. It's essentially the book, but it's an e-regulation form. So, here's a license and fees, license recreation, hunting and fishing, general rules and regulations, deer rules and regulations. So you click on that, it takes you to deer regulations, and it talks about all deer need to be tagged, some of the game zone things, antlerless deer, individual deer tag program, and deer quota program. It's real self-explanatory. The CW carcass importation regulations we talked about last week. And then down here at the bottom, it's got the frequently asked questions. Anytime you see an FAQ page, that's probably where you need to start, because I'm sure whatever you've got, for the most part, has already been asked and answered by somebody else. So, and it covers everything. How do I change my address? How many fishing rods may I use with a saltwater fishing license on a boat? I have nuisance wildlife problems, such as snake in the yard, squirrel in the attic, etc. Who do I call? How old does my child need to be before they're required to purchase a hunting or fishing license? Can I camp on WNMA property? And there's now here the deer seasons on private lands. Another, there you go. It takes you to all the regulations for game zone 1, 2, 3, and 4, private land hunting. So they've made it, and they made a big push for this e-regulation thing. You can go to the website, dnr.sc.gov/regulations. If you actually go to the DNR homepage, across the top, you'll see some by boating, education, fishing, hunting, land maps, regulations, right across the toolbar. And on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see the book. And then there's mobile regulations. And it's real easy to use. Like I said, if you, you know, general information, license and fees, freshwater fishing, saltwater hunting, and it'll take you back to the DNR website if you need to go there. So they've made a real effort to simplify what you need to know to get you outdoors, whether it's hunting or fishing or whatever else. So that I just wanted to get that out there. Let's hit on a few calendar events for this week, which as always is brought to you by Visit Anderson Green Pine Landing Event Center. I'm still struggling with that, all the altitude and the hiking and the late flights and all coming home. Bear with me. We'll survive. Upcountry South Carolina, the Hawk Watch. Right now, you are very close to a lot of cool birding. Every year this time of the year, birds are migrating. Here's an opportunity to see thousands of raptors and a spectacular set where they're heading for South America for the winter and catching the thermals and trying. But you can see 200 to 300 hawks at one time, and the highest single day count was over 5,000. Broadwing hawks, bald eagles, ospreys, American kestrels, Mississippi kites, turkey vultures, black vultures. It happens early September through late November of each year at Caesars Head State Park. That's where you go to see this. And that's where you also need, what, a pair of binoculars and a birding book. I mean, this is family stuff, okay? If you want more information on it, It's just, I would say, Google Hawk Watch or go to Upcountry South Carolina and hit the Hawk Watch thing. And it's just a, it's an opportunity. It's close. It's fun. It's one of those things in South Carolina we have things that make us special. This is one of them. Migration time. So Hawk Watch, September 3rd through November the 30th up at Caesars Head State Park. Check it out. Save the date. If you are, this is not a classroom type thing, and this might be a little bit more than what some of you need, but if you're interested in prescribed burning and all, September 24th to 25th in Newberry, South Carolina, this is a day and a half event. The Prescribed Fire Council of South Carolina is going to meet, and it's www.scpfc.net, and they're going to have an afternoon field tour, an evening social, classroom, and lunch. It's their annual meeting in Newberry. If you're interested in prescribed burning, effects of fire, stuff like this, this is the place to start. So get that out of the way. Here's a good one. If you're interested in being part of the, and I believe this is the volunteer side of it, the South Carolina Search and Rescue. You know, you somebody gets lost in the woods, you got to go find them. There are people who are trained in search and rescue who go help. They're volunteers. And here's your opportunity to be in one. They are given this September 24th, 26th, October 1st, 3rd, 8th, 10th, 15th, and you got a test on the 17th. This is happening in Greer, the Pelham Batesville Fire Department. That's where the testing is. So they're going to cover land navigation, man trapping, ropes, rescue, survival, and more. If you're interested in becoming a volunteer and helping with search and rescue here in South Carolina, the website, www.scsaronline.org. So South Carolina Search and Rescue Online.org. We'll get you started. And they're all the time looking for volunteers. That's an opportunity to gain some skills, some valuable skills, not only to help somebody else, but to help yourself. National Hunting and Fishing Day. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, September 28th. Enjoy a great day in the outdoors at this free family event. Activities include archery, air rifle shooting, fishing, kayaking, fly tying, camo games, plus exhibits from organizations to include boating safety, butterflies, and beekeeping. It is going to be held at the South Cove County Park in Seneca, South Carolina on National Hunting and Fishing Day, September the 28th. I urge you to get your family together, go out there, and just see what the outdoors has to offer. If you're going to be around the Mount Pleasant Pier, or I'm sorry, this one actually is the Folly Beach Pier. Every year down in Charleston between the Mount Pleasant Pier and the Folly Beach Pier, they have some fishing tournaments called the Cask Off Tournaments. Not the last one, the next to last one of the year, September 28th, 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Folly Beach Pier. Adults, $10, military, $9, youth, $8. Tournaments held, rain or shine. And, you know, it's just an opportunity to go fishing. Sponsored by Hadrill's. You got any question, call Hadrill's Point. They'll give you all the information you might need to know. But there's an opportunity to get one last little fishing, saltwater fishing, pier fishing tournament in before the end of the year. And that's just a few things. There's so much more out there. I stacks of it. And one of the favorite things to do, I like to screenshot it and send it myself and then email the screenshot. So I've got screenshots that I get past because I don't have time to get to them all. This one's always fun. This is recreation.gov. Get these things all the time. 10 tips for first-time tent campers. Oof. 10 tips for first-time tent campers. Okay, you ready for this? Because I promise you, cooler weather is coming. And with it is the opportunity to get outdoors. Whether you're doing camping in your backyard, whether you're going to a campground somewhere in the mountains, whether you're going to go down to one of the state parks along the coast and camp during the fall, which, you know, sometimes allows you to get away from the mosquitoes, or whether you're headed out, you know, I'm proud of myself. My sleeping bag I used at the KOA is 29 years old. It's a good, but you take care of stuff. You buy quality stuff and take care of it to last you. So I went, but I did buy a new sleeping pad, and boy, that thing is nice. But here you go. 10 tips. Keep it simple. Make your trip a memorable one by planning an easy outing close to home. A weekend escape for one or two nights within an hour of where you live is the best choice for a first camping trip. maybe even in the backyard. Make a reservation. While many campgrounds have first-come, first-served sites, they aren't guaranteed to be available. Make your reservations online. Read up on the site details, allowable equipment, and amenities to plan ahead. Pack light but smart. Make a checklist so you don't forget any gear and try to pack items that serve more than one purpose. Pro tip, bring earplugs. Nature can be louder than you think, or the guy in the tent might snore. Okay, plan a menu. Think about what you want to eat during your trip and plan out a full menu from the first to the last day, including recipes. It's common for new campers to have to run to the store to buy something they forgot. And let me tell you, if you don't do any of the cast iron cooking, check into that. And let me tell you, Granny Smith apple cobbler in a Dutch oven is to die for, people. Prep meals in advance. Manage all your ingredients and prep meals before you arrive. You can save time during the trip by packing a mix of foods that don't need to be cooked or require less effort to prepare. Test your gear, whether you choose to rent or purchase equipment. Make sure you test it before your trip. Avoid spending hours trying to figure out how to set up your tent by going through a few trial runs at home. Don't forget the furniture. Review the campsite amenities on recreation.gov to see if picnic tables are available. As a good rule of thumb, pack a chair for each member of your group, as well as a table for food prep, eating, and wild and games. Arrive at check-in, be on time. Bring the fun. Plan to have a variety of kid-friendly camping activities on hand and in mind, but allow for plenty of unstructured play and discovery. Let the kids get dirty. Streams, lakes, and portable showers are great for rinsing off. And follow the rules. Be a smart and respectful camper by following all posted rules and guidelines. When you're done with your trip, be sure to leave the site like you found it. Following, what do we like to say? Leave no trace prints. Only leave your footprints. Take with you the pictures and the memories. And that's a good camping trip. So anyway, you can find those at recreation.gov. Pretty easy rules to follow. Just some tips, maybe to take some of the unknowns out of that first trip out into the wilds of your backyard, or Devil's Fork State Campground, or Buck Hall Landing Recreation Site. Get out there. That's all I got to say. All right, hang on through the break. We'll be back with another segment of Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Have you seen this? This is a hoot. I found this. It's called, it's from I Love Charleston. And it's a map of the state. because you got the upstate, like the Midlands and the coastal plain, and this kind of breaks it all down. Plus, so let's see. We'll start in the upstate. So along the mountains, that's Summer Homes. Clemson's football. Baptists, the Georgia, the people over near the Georgia line, they're Bubba's. And you get down to the Midlands, you got the Masters Bunch. Steeplechase parties, Hicks. Oh, Columbia's got football and corruption. You got Hicks, all the way across, over probable Tar Heels. That would be Chesterfield County. You got Pedro. Everybody knows about that, right? North, south of the border, whatever. Just across the line over there, over past Florence and all, those are Yankees. Those are Yankees. And you got probable Tar Heels. Yeah, you got that. Okay, so then you got some Hicks down through there too. Country nuclear waste is down in Oaken. Nothing. Broadband across the state says nothing. Okay, then you got Savannah, a.k.a. Charleston, the sequel. around Buford, you got Democrats and Pat Conroy and Marines. And then you come up into Charleston, you got, the plantations, the shopping, the swamp, the lake, which is Marion and Moultrie, shrimp, the beach, fishing, and then pretty much Myrtle Beach has just got golf. That's all it is, golf. There's something else again. And then you got Kmart by the sea. So just... I'm sorry, I'm laughing, and people are probably scratching their head going, what's he so funny? If you see it, this is like I say, it's got map key. Greater Charleston, down towards Savannah, up past Georgetown. If you get a chance, look for it. It's funny. Sorry. If you didn't get my humor. Well, that's your fault. It's Saturday. You ought to be in a better mood. Hiking. It's fun. We talk about leave no trace and all. And I noticed some of this out in Colorado, and it brought back up an article that I had from that I'd seen back in February by Randall Bonner from Wide Open Spaces. And rock stacking or cairns can have a bigger ecological impact than you realize. Now, I'm not a full-blown tree hugger. I do think we all have a responsibility to protect a natural resource. It's not a religion with me, although I feel religious when I'm out in nature because I'm closer to God and creation and all. But I can see where this, rock stacking. Hey, it's kind of we didn't stack rocks when we were kids. We tried to balance a salt shaker and salt. Did you ever do that? Did anybody ever do that? Anyway, now it's, for a lot of hikers, rock cairns are stacking rocks. And we, like I said, on one of our hikes, out in Colorado, I saw a little bit of this and it brought it back. So, take it for what it's worth. Think about it. And then, like I said, think twice before we do stuff. While I was attending, and this is written, like I said, by Randall Bonner, February 16th from Wide Open Spaces. Rock stacking might appear to be a harmless and fun outdoor activity, but still detrimental to fragile riparian ecosystems. A lot of people do this around creeks and all. While I was attending a small outdoors festival, outside of town one summer, a heat wave struck and sent dozens of campers scrambling in a nearby creek to go for a dip and cool off in the shade and serenity of a trickling stream. It became the hub for campers for that day. Some threw sticks for their dogs, some wandered up and down the creek picking berries, and some creatively stacked rocks. Cairns, Gaelic for heap of stones. As I observed these rock stacks, I noticed that they were formed directly in front of a marker for a salmon stream survey. These temporary installations, natural incidents, may be an expression of patience and balance to the ego of the builder. But to some naturalists who practice leave no trace ethics, to stack rocks is often seen as nothing more than evidence left behind that the environment was disturbed by human intrusion, natural graffiti, and vandalism of habitat. These disturbances in the geological games of Jingo leave behind more than just footprints and can be potentially damaging to the life cycles of organisms connected to the natural area's river rock. Beyond the visual disturbances, each rock in the stream is blooming with life. You ever turned over we all do it, turned over and see what's underneath the rock, and there's crayfish, and there's, in certain rivers, it's salmon eggs. You could be lifting the roof off the home of a crayfish, and you can lift it off, just put it back. I'm not saying you have to be totally hands-off because you're afraid to harm the environment. Look, it's just a matter of, there's nothing in that one, putting it back. Removing rocks from fragile stream habitats is essentially the equivalent to removing bricks from someone else's house while raiding their refrigerator and food pantry. The mentality that stacks of stones won't hurt anything takes away from the fact this growing trend is becoming a problem for national parks where millions of visitors frequent each year. It's one thing when one person does it. When millions of people do it, now you have a problem. The Ozark National Scenic Riverways receive 1.3 million visitors annually, many of which will disturb streams in a number of ways, prompting a public announcement about the practice of building cairns. So they did it out west. Like in the United States, national parks, moving or dislodging rocks is against the rules, and rangers are encouraged to knock down piles of rocks. Obviously, moving a rock from the river has some direct impact. A few possible things that come to mind are disturbing spawning salmon, fry, macroinvertebrates, and then altering the course flow of the stream. Nature does enough of that on its own. We don't need to help it out. It goes on to say it's ballooned over the last few years, and how much impact there are. And like I said, you take it over, millions of visitors to streams and national parks, and it kind of ends up this way. Most people are simply unaware that their actions are disturbing the natural environment, or maybe they're intending to mark trail or create a little harmless rock art. However, many who are fully aware of the ecological impact of rock cairns simply shrug it off as a lower priority in an environment that faces multiple challenges, many of them created by other humans. There is merit to everyone doing some part to heal wounds to the ecosystems. The death of by a thousand cuts. The issue of stone sculptures and wild spaces is a balancing act that you can't afford to topple. So just something to keep in mind when you're out there and roaming around and you know, I would say this. Go ahead and try to balance the salt shaker the next time you're in the restaurant. It's a whole lot better. Let's see. Got a few minutes here. My friend Brian Grossman down at QDMA wrote this. And like I said, I'm just catching up on some of the stuff that I haven't had time to in the last little bit. I think I got enough time to do this. Wrote an article for the Quality Deer Management Association. No, I don't have time. 3 minutes. Actually, I should have more than 3 minutes. This is a 13-minute segment. No, 12 and 12-something, right? 12 minutes. So I got about 4 minutes to go. Okay, so I got a minute longer here. It's time to step up and mentor a new hunter. A lot of us talk about it. A lot of us look at the statistics of hunter numbers going down. Somebody's made the comparison, you know, if each of us mentored one hunter, we would have more hunters than we ever had before. So I don't expect everybody to do this. Some of us can't teach. Others of us are great teachers. And it's time for those of us who are good teachers to step up. The importance of mentoring, Brian writes. Chances are you've seen the headlines highlighting the decline in hunter numbers. Despite how it may seem where you hunt, fewer people are buying hunting licenses. And by that, we're talking about conservation funding is the big thing. In fact, we've lost nearly 2 million hunters just within the last 5 years. Baby boomers are aging out, and we're not replacing them fast enough. Not only for the future of hunting heritage, but for the conservation funding. For years, state wildlife agencies and conservation organizations have focused on recruiting new hunters through a variety of youth-oriented events. While that's a noble undertaking, it hasn't had the result we all hope for. And I think part of that's because, you know, kids, when you mentor a kid, you have to do it all. You mentor a younger adult. Now they can do it on their own some. And that's where the Field of Fort program with Hank and Charles Evans are coming on so well. And he mentions, Brian mentions that in this article too. So here's some set expectations. Once you've asked around and found somebody to mentor this fall, now what? The first step should be a get together with your new mentee, perhaps over some venison or other wild game, to discuss expectations, which is important because some people think hunting is all about the harvest, and it's not. Expectations need to be built up for just being outdoors. Train them right. Now that each of you understand the other expectations, the next step is helping the new hunter prepare for the upcoming hunt. You know, scouting, clothing, gear, all part of it. All your efforts should be focused on preparing them to be able to hunt on their own once they feel ready. Make them comfortable. When the day finally arrives to go hunting, remember that your number one objective is to make sure that they have a good time and are comfortable with the whole experience. Use the time spent in the stand or in the blind to get to know them better, as well as to teach them about hunting and the role it plays in wildlife conservation. What's their motivation for hunting? You know, success is measured in a lot of ways. Continue to be there for them. That's what mentoring is all about. You know, it's not just taking them once. Okay, I've planted the idea. Let it grow on its own. You've got to stay with it. It's not a simple one deer season or one hunting season. It's a mindset you have to get in. It's a multi-year thing. Final thoughts. If we're able to turn the tide on declining hunting numbers, it is going to take a group effort. If each of us, one new hunter this fall, we could easily reverse the trend and hunter numbers will skyrocket. Sadly, that will not happen. But those of you that are able to do it, mentor a hunter. Think about it. You're passing on that which has given you so much enjoyment in your life. Pass it along. All right. Hey, we've made it. Haven't gone to sleep yet. One more segment to go. See you with more Woods and Water South on the other side. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. We survived, people. We survived. You know, a lot of people ask me, you know, when does it start snowing out west? Get a text from my brother. I sent him something. I said about the temperature. He said, yeah, so it started cooler today than yesterday here. They're having to plow the park road today. Snow said, yeah. So it snowed in Estes Park, which is pretty cool. I want to go back. I'm sorry. I'm out of here. Y'all finish up the show. I am going to the Greenville Spartanburg. I'm going back out to Colorado. No. I love my home here in South Carolina. We are so blessed to have so many different things. You know, to have the snow here in the morning, go in the afternoon, it's worth something, folks. And I can't remember if I got to this earlier in another show somewhere, but they added 955 acres to Jones Gap State Park. And I can't remember. It's still in my what we call stack of stuff. So I must not have gotten to it. But the state park in the upstate has grown by about a quarter of its current size with the addition of 955 acres of Blue Ridge Wilderness, expanding the popular park's capacity to accommodate visitors. So the property known as Gap Creek will be added to Jones Gap State Park in northern Greenville County. The Nature Conservancy and Arlington, Virginia-based charitable environmental organization purchased the acreage from private landowners for $3.7 million in 2017, and they're going to transfer it to South Carolina Parks, Recreation, and Tourism, which oversees South Carolina's 47 state parks. Likely won't be open to the public for about 2 years while they plan and develop the amenities. But once the land is open, it will help meet an already growing demand to access the site. With only 36 provided parking spaces now, Jones Gap often reaches capacity early in the day. And it's the new addition was the largest remaining unprotected portion of the Mountain Bridge Wilderness, a 40,000-acre swath of land between Table Rock Watershed and North Saluda Watershed. Gap Creek nearly completes the corridor, which was originally planned by conservationist Tommy Weich of Greenville. So, cool. Black bears, songbirds, and fish. There you go. Trillium flowers and salamanders. Cool. All right. I love to play this every year. Deer season starts up this coming, well, today while you're listening to this, I'll be deer hunting with my daughter. Youth Day. Whether we see a deer or not, whether she ends up pulling the trigger or not, then that decision is hers. You know, we have talked about it. She knows what conservation is about. She knows why we hunt. The pulling the trigger part will be up to her. And I'm totally fine with that. She knows, you know, and it's a really cool feeling when they reach that point. But I love to play this every year. It's put out a couple years ago by the National Deer Alliance, The Old Tree Stand.
If this old tree stand could talk, what stories it could tell about the bucks that got away and those that fell. It saw Grandpa kill the Big Ten back in 74. It's where he last hunted before getting too old to go anymore. It's one holler over from where Dad's first buck was found. He proudly drove that spike all over town with his tailgate down. If this old tree stand could talk, imagine the sunrises it's seen. Every color in God's palette, red and yellow, brown and green. It's watched bucks rub trees, heard wild turkeys thunder. It's had storms pass above and all kinds of critters pass under. If this old tree stand could talk, it'd tell you about Dad crying in its seat. After hearing the news, my mom was expecting me. As she tells it, he was headed out the door full speed. She whispered, "Get a big one tonight. We've got another mouth to feed." I smile about that and gaze at my daughter as we sit in the woods with the rifle my pop bought her. If this old tree stand could talk, a patriot it would be, proud to stand tall in the land of the free. It's been here while wars were fought far away, providing freedom for my family to enjoy opening day. If this old tree stand could talk, I'd asked it how I'd done. Not my skill as a hunter, but the man I'd become. It's seen my ethics tested and watched over my decisions. It's been the spot I go to clear my thinking and vision. If this old tree stand could talk, my prayer is that it would say, "You're an honorable deer hunter, like those who showed you the way."
I always like to listen to that one. Replay it on show. Seen my ethics test. You know, what we do when no one else is around says a lot about us. And hunting is, there is no room in hunting for unethical people. Just not. So I encourage you this year, when you get into the old tree stand, whether it's a new one or one you've sat in your whole life, think about what you're doing. Think about the freedom you have to do it. And make sure you live up to it. News from Charleston. The federal government, which is, you know, the parks, U.S. Parks, National Park Service, blocked private boats dropping visits to historic Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor. This has been something I've wondered about because there's some sandbars there. You know, they have a pier you can pull up to and the, what's the boat that takes you out? Let's see if I can find it right now. The boat that takes you out to old Fort Sumter. I can't remember the name of the boat. Anyway, it's no big deal. They have blocked it. And some of the reasons you can't go to Fort Sumter for free anymore, the National Park Service is out. And this is from August the 6th of this year. Rangers have put off limits access from the sandbar beach between the fort and James Island, popularly known as Pine Island, and are turning away people who attempt to climb their riprap to venture into the landmark tourist attraction. Pine Island itself, one of the area's weekend party boat sandbars, could eventually be closed off as well. The Sumter closing pulls the anchor on one of the local secrets among the Charleston boating community, that the $23 fee charged by Fort Sumter Tour ferries didn't pay for admission, just the ride. The fort has been free to enter. But federal managers say they've had enough of people partying at a historic site where alcohol isn't allowed. They need to step up security, more carefully manage erosion and artifact looting around the deteriorating nearly 200-year-old historic landmark. The fort, the target of the bombardment that ignited the, we don't refer to it, the Civil War around here, is the War of Northern Aggression. Sorry about that, people. It is one of the most sought-after destinations among history buffs and Charleston tourists. It attracts more than 800,000 people per year, along with companion sites Fort Moultrie and Charles Pinckney historic sites. The current use of the beach includes people consuming alcohol and partying rather than coming to the fort for a historical visit, said Park Superintendent J. Tracy Stakely. Security in the area of the active shooter requires a change from previous times. I don't really buy that, but okay. The move outraged local Captain Chris Rabins of Charleston Charters, who watched Rangers stop his customers after he's dropped them off for years at the beach to see the fort. They're giving Spirit Line Cruises, which runs Fort Sumter Tours, a monopoly. It hurts my business. I think it's an injustice. I think it's unfair. Which I can see from his standpoint, but I can also see from the Fort Sumter standpoint. You just can't have everybody coming aboard. In the letter, Stakely also notes the fort can quickly go over capacity with unregulated visitors during high tourism times. The fort is an archaeological site, and private boat visitors have been observed taking souvenirs from where artifacts are present. See, when you're on the tour, you can't do that. The numbers of people coming from the beach are eroding grass areas around the fort. Rehabilitation of the fort's breakwaters will be taking place in the next few years in the same area where people come up from the beach. Among other problems, Stakely said a boat anchor just offshore pulled up the fort's electric line along with the anchor, causing significant infrastructure cost to them. No violations have been fined. The service has just set up signs, handed out brochures, and talked with people who try to come up from the sandbar. Here's something. The Park Service doesn't own the entire sandbar. The Department of Natural Resources is in the process of purchasing much of it from a private owner. Currently, boats can still come to the sandbar. They just can't access our facilities. So just in case you're wondering about going to Fort Sumter on your own boat, there you go. Can't do it any longer. Which, you know, it's one of those things like the rock stacking. Like the article I have on here that's, hiking is hurting elk herds. It's Moderation, what you do. Let's. I always love Theodore Roosevelt. He got a bunch of good quotes. Here's one of them. It's not the critic who counts, not the man which points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. Teddy Roosevelt, man, saw a bunch of his work out there. And, you know, what foresight in the setting aside national parks like he did when he was president. I was in some of them this past week. And like I said, we need those wild places. We need those wild places for all of us to visit. Just be sure when you visit that you take care of them. Okay. And that, let's see, did I get that? Got that? All that? Okay. 2,600 miles, I think, when he dropped me off at the Denver airport this week. We've covered a little over 2,600 miles. Together, two brothers, with it, no fights. You know what the best part of it was? Satellite radio. Man, we listened to the 70s, the 80s, the Beatles channel, classic country, the bridge, highway music. It's great. Hey, look, thanks for tuning in today. Hope you have a great week. But, man, fall is coming. Make time to get out there. Take the back roads when you can. Don't forget the camera. See you back next week. More Woods and Water, South Carolina. Hit me from behind, 'cause I'm gone to